Swimming's easy. I can teach him the way my mom taught me. Swim! Well, welcome back, everybody, to Take Me to Your Reader, discussing adapted science fiction at its best and worst. I'm Seth.
I'm James.
And I'm Colin.
And this time we're joined once again by Peter Kusky, Colin's son.
Hello, how's it going?
Good to have you, Peter.
Thank you.
I was going to say this is the first time we've had you in person, but that's not true because you were with us on the Red October, or as we call it, the USS Blueback.
Also, unfortunately, for a cabin at the end of the world.
You were in person for that one?
Yep.
I forgot about that. Okay.
It's okay. I too blocked that podcast out of my mind.
Yeah.
don't forget to get hit his punch card too. So.
Right. Yeah. I actually thought about
bringing one of those.
We should make one. Yeah. Take Me to Your Reader guest punch card. with 10 free guest recordings, you get a free new guest recording.
you get banned permanently.
Probably a more accurate idea.
So I don't know. It feels pretty close to the ban, I think.
It's only 4 or 5 times.
Yeah. Anyhow, we are continuing our robot series, which we started with the Bicentennial Man, I think, and we will continue. And Mickey 17, Mickey 7, Mickey 12, plus or minus 5, was kind of a pseudo entry in it because it was expendable workforce.
Yeah, yeah.
But this time we are going to be talking about The Wild Robot by
Peter Brown.
Which was when?
Published in 2016.
Okay.
Which is why none of our kids read it, because they were all too old by then.
Yep.
They were reading their own things, like YouTube.
I think you mean TikTok.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm such an old man.
I was around by then.
And then it was adapted to a film in 2024, which was nominated for a Best Picture, for Best Animated Feature.
Yes, yes.
And is it on the list for the Hugos? I can't remember.
It is.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
So was Flo, but I think Wild Robot should win this one.
Mm. Well, Colin and Phil had good things to say about Flo. I still haven't watched it, but...
Dude.
Good things sarcastically or actual good
It's
things?
A cat movie, so...
Okay. There's a dog in it. There's a whole bunch of dogs in it.
And a capybara.
And a capybara.
Secretary Ooh, bird.
Secretary bird. Lemur.
Weird looking whale.
Turbo whale.
I don't know.
Yeah, I remember
you talking about that.
What makes a whale a weird looking whale? I mean... Really, they're all kind of weird. Like,
just watch the podcast, you'll find out, James. Or the movie.
When it's falling through the sky next to a potted plant.
You could say it was a fluke, but...
that's a little tan fish.
Yep.
Well done. Okay. Well done.
Yes, The Wild Robot. And we got to go see it at OMSI, which was awesome.
As part of the Science Fiction Film Festival. It's in its last week. Mm-hmm. By the time you get this recording, it will be too late for you. But next year, if they have it, you can come.
Yes.
We will allow it.
I believe they showed The Wild Robot 5 times in the first week.
Yeah,
because it was their best performing movie. It sounds like they put it on that much.
Well, yeah, I mean, it started during spring break too, or thereabouts.
Yeah, it was a bit of a full house.
And a spring break,
yeah.
Well, when we went to see the Iron Giant last year, same kind of a thing, right? It was jam packed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, and OMSI does a big push during spring break to get parents to bring their kids in there, and so it makes sense that a movie like The Wild Robot would do really well. But yeah, it was my first time seeing it. Had anyone seen it before?
Nope. Yes, I had seen it 3 times prior to this.
Nice.
Twice on a flight, once in a movie theater.
Okay. And book. Anybody had read the book?
Nope.
No.
No, none of us. Okay. Yeah, like Colin said, right? This one, it came out too late to be something that we would read to the kids.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
By a good 10 years.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, and then, so James James has family that is starting to come into the readable age.
True.
Although he's, little one is 2.5, is that right?
Yeah.
So, a bit young yet.
A little bit young. Yeah.
Picture books.
Right. Mm-hmm. Not enough pictures yet.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys...
not large enough print yet.
Did you guys watch the movie first or read the book first?
I watched the movie first.
Okay.
I did too.
Really? Okay.
I read the book first.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I bought it at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
So support your local bookstore, Barnes & Noble. Yeah. There's still a brick and mortar, so...
support your bookstores.
We'll count it. Yeah. So what is this book about?
Plot summary or thematic summary?
Let's start with the mod. No. We'll get to themes later.
Oh,
or as Damo would say, teams.
Teams.
You want to give us a plot run through, Peter?
A robot washes up on a shore and tries to survive. And then ends up, almost said befriending a baby chick, but it's almost like bemothering a little chick.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Becoming an unexpected mother.
Becoming an unexpected mother to a little baby chick and their life. On the island.
Yeah, it's a goose, right?
Gosling, not chick.
Dang it.
Gosling. Little baby Gosling and their life and adventures on and off the island.
This kid, Colin. Jeez. Right.
So this is the first book in a three-book series by Peter Brown.
Right.
Peter Brown is an award-winning author and illustrator, although I think The Wild Robot is really, it just went massively popular. It hit the New York Times bestseller list, won awards, starred reviews from Kirkus and Publishers Weekly and all the other places, wrote two more books, and then, 8 years later, becomes adapted into an incredible movie that we'll talk about later.
Yeah, yeah.
Spoilers.
And the book is more, it skews younger than even like YA, right? It's more like juvenile fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's somewhere north of the Iron Giant and Jumanji and the Polar Express,
right.
But definitely underneath...
And it is one of those books I want to say for any parents of young children where you want a read aloud, where you want to be able to say, okay, one chapter, because some of the chapters in this book are about a page and a half.
Yeah. So the book is approximately 200 pages long and there are 80 chapters.
I was noticing that I was reading it. I was like, oh, I'm already three chapters in. It's been like a minute.
Yeah.
You're screaming through this, man. Way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an incredibly fast read, right? Where I was going to hand it off to one of you guys, and I was like, I should just finish this today. And you know, like an hour and a half later, I was done. Because it goes down easy.
Yeah. I would say, you know, it could be read to anybody who was 5 or 6, and it's probably read alone by anybody who is
7 or 8.
6, 7, 8? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would just skew younger just for, those go-getters.
Yeah. The interesting thing about it is that while it definitely skews younger, you know, it does talk about the animals eat each other, you know, and there's some death and dismemberment kind of stuff that happens.
It does. It exposed themes in a very gentle way.
A frozen solid weasel, life, I believe it was, as well.
Dart.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it also definitely is targeted at the parents because it has a lot of themes of parenting.
Yes.
And I love the, once the robot has adopted this gosling, you know, trying to figure out, well, okay, what do I need to do? And asks this older duck or older goose, what do I need to do? the goose says, or duck says, oh, it's nothing. You just have to provide the gosling with food and water and shelter, make him feel loved, but don't pamper him too much. Keep him away from danger and make sure he learns to walk and talk and swim and fly and get along with others and look after himself. And that's really all there is to motherhood.
So, you know, as a bunch of guys, fatherhood was severely left out of this. So
true, but since the robot is genderless, it's just about parenting.
I wouldn't say the robot's genderless.
Because it's named Roz?
It's sexless. Yes.
There we go. Okay.
It's not genderless.
Oh, okay. All right. All right.
And he does refer to her as her mother, as his mother.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Right, Bill does.
Yeah.
I think that's because the first thing a gosling imprints on is its mother. So
true.
By default, it is mother.
And if you look in nature too, right? Like who does the vast majority of the rearing of young in nature? There are places where, you know, the parents kind of share the duties.
Seahorse is a solid exception.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's fair to say that in nature, the moms do a lot of the work.
True.
And with humans as well.
Family dependent, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So what do we think of the book?
Craptacular in a good way.
What? Craptacular. Okay. Explain.
So are we going spoilery or not?
Oh, yeah.
We always go full spoilers.
Okay.
People should know this by now.
That's a dumb question. I'm just kidding.
Raising the gosling in the book is Bright Bill, and in the movie as well. Roz's role of raising Bright Bill is very different from the book from the movie, where in the book she gets a lot more community involvement in how to help raise him, with building her structure. And several times throughout the book, there was a lot of talk about crap. One of the deers helped build a garden and basically says, everyone, crap there. You'll get stuff. In the end, when the Rico robots come, one of them dies because one of them gets assaulted by dive bombing birds.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, with excrement.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Gets strafed.
Yeah. Yes. Gets strafed.
To be fair, it's not actually poop, right? Because it's a cloaca.
Yes.
So it's everything.
Yes.
And that's not fiction. That stuff actually happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dive bombing birds.
Oh, absolutely.
It has happened to us.
Yeah. We were out on a disc golf course. I think it was walking up to hole number 8 at Orchard.
Mm-hmm.
And I made the joke about geese flying overhead. And I said, cover. And mere seconds later, plop.
Yeah. And I believe I said, oh, it never happened. You know, and then he gets hit. But there was that one tree by the library where we used to run, where there was like an owl nest or a hawk nest or something. Yeah. I don't know. At least twice walking under that, I got crapped on. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Pretty sure it's a defensive strategy.
Yeah.
So the defensive pooping thing reminds me of our next door neighbor. This just happened like a month ago. There was a bird, like it was a robin. Mm-hmm. And it was watching, it saw itself in his mirror, the side view mirror, and mm-hmm. just kept attacking the mirror. Mm. And when it realized it couldn't kill itself in the mirror, it just pooped on the mirror and then left. Giant, his car was just covered in poop now.
Nice. Are you sure that wasn't like a critical response? This has no plot, no acting, no action, just.
Was it a Tesla?
Good thing I parked the Tesla inside.
Yes. James has a pre 2024 Tesla.
Right. I figure it's safe because it's like rainbow colored.
Yes. Yes.
It's obviously not a Musk supporting Tesla.
It's an ally Tesla.
Right. Yeah.
Did you enjoy the book, James?
I enjoyed the book. Yes. Yeah. I was thinking like the book is definitely like less mature than the movie, in my opinion, which is a good thing, I think, probably. Mm-hmm. More like you guys were saying, a children's book where the chapters read quickly, mm-hmm. and like not a whole lot happens in each chapter individually, mm-hmm. but a bunch of chapters together. So I think it would be a good book where you can pause and stop.
Yeah.
Things like that. And it had, had those themes of grief and death and life and all that stuff, but brought about very gently in a way that I think was consumable by a younger audience. So I think it's good from that perspective.
It's fascinating that Roz is kind of, responsible for the death of the Gosling's parents.
Yeah.
It was an accident.
An accident, yeah.
And such things happen.
Right.
But the way she reacts to it, Right. We'll say she.
And it was an interesting dynamic between the idea of instincts and programming, mm-hmm. which I enjoyed the discussion on that theme, and also to this whole theme of like robots with feelings. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if the code rewriting thing came out in the book or just in the movie.
I think that's at least my interpretation of it was that was just in the movie.
Oh, okay. So where, like, they kept attributing feelings to her, even though there really wasn't feelings because she's a robot. All this stuff, unless she had an emotion chip, maybe.
Right. It kind of goes back to Short Circuit. You remember Short Circuit where like Johnny Five reprograms himself.
Right.
So,
well, cause there's a lot of instances in the book where it says Roz changed her voice to be a more blank tone.
Yeah.
So that's what gave me the impression of she's not actually overwriting any of her code. This is just mm-hmm. her following her code, but kind
expressing
of
it
expressing
learning,
it differently.
Learning how to react to other emotions.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But still within the bounds of her programming.
Right.
Well, it kind of reminds me of service model a little bit where, here in that book, you have this robot that's trying to find the way to do the thing it's supposed, it's programmed to do.
Right.
Service model is the downer version of it.
Yeah.
I think it's very funny, but it also is a bit of a downer where in this, here there's this robot that's meant to do a job mm-hmm. and doesn't know how to fulfill that programming. And then it's like, oh, well, I'm a mother to a Gosling now. So now I know what I need to do.
Yeah. And the nice thing about it is we talk about Toy Story in several contexts, having layers. So mm-hmm. like there's mm-hmm. the story that all the kids will understand, but the things that the parents will understand, like we talked about, how do you explain death and dealing with emotions and showing emotions? Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that comes out is some of the other mothers are talking to Roz saying, well, you know how they are at this age. And she, of course, responds back, No, I do not know how they are at this age.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it does well at addressing both audiences, like you just said, the parents and also the children, for what the children should hear and what the parents should hear.
Yeah.
Well, and to give teachable moments, mm-hmm. Like you said, the chapter's short, so you stop there and you say, hey, let's talk about that a little bit
right.
more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the book to me is very much about parenting and how it changes a person. Mm-hmm. I would never say that parents are better people than people who don't have kids.
Because
there's some crap.
We got you, James. I got your back, buddy.
There's plenty of crap parents out there. But you do definitely learn something about yourself through parenting that I'm not sure how you learn it otherwise. Like you kind of learn how selfish you are because all of a sudden you have to do things you don't necessarily want to do, but now you have this little person that depends on you. I mean, owning a pet has some of that as well. But you can leave them in a crate, you get in trouble when you do that right. with kids. So
only people find out. Your secret's safe with me.
I find it interesting that there is one human in the book, and he kills something with a gun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The farmer.
Yes.
And, of course, the humans also cause the climate change.
Right.
Which is a plot point as well, right? Because the extreme are, weather on the island.
The right? winters are getting colder, the summers are getting hotter, and mm-hmm. some people say the sea level, the ocean was right, was getting higher.
Yeah.
I think that's the quote.
I feel like that that theme was a little bit more overt in the book than, yeah. than in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can just show it in the book, and the parents will go, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if you've watched Flow, you know that it's really the sequel to the Wild Robot series in that aspect.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think the first time you really get any notion of the climate change, because they don't really blame the severe winter on the climate change in the movie.
Right. Yeah.
It's just kind of mentioned as a throwaway, it almost seems right. like.
But then you get that flash of the Golden Gate Bridge underwater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Yeah, in the movie. And Emily was like, what the hell?
that's from your guys' neck of the woods.
Yeah. That's why she was like all kind of confused for a second. I told her about the climate change theme of the book. She's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I like that shorthand in the movie, but we'll talk about that.
It's like seeing, was it Cannon Beach get swamped in a Knock at the Cabin?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Forgot.
Oregon. Why don't I keep bringing that movie up? I hated that movie.
Colin's turn.
Yeah.
What am I talking about?
Everything.
Anything else about the book?
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once?
I listened to the audiobook. It's very, very well read with great nice. Voice distinction. It opens with a lot of special effects and background music and then stops, which I was disappointed in. I think it would have been nice to have that continue throughout the book, but I know it's expensive.
It's because you got spoiled by recent graphic audio.
Yeah, I did.
Oh. Yeah, not all audiobooks pull out all the stops for the whole thing.
Yeah. So yeah, I liked the book. I thought it was well written. I enjoyed it. I could imagine reading this to my kids when they were that, the right mm-hmm. age or so, and having great talks about it and giving everybody turns to read along with me when they were the right age. And
mm-hmm. this book is definitely, I feel like it's definitely made to be read aloud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a short lived award that was won by Trenton Lee Stewart's book,
I don't know why you're looking at me.
Mysterious Benedict Society.
The Mysterious Benedict Society. I tried to track down the awards. I wanted to see what other books were in it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was made for very long, so it's hard to find on the internet. Oh.
I did enjoy when what were the robots called that were to Rico?
Rico's.
Yeah, they were coming to retrieve Roz. And we should mention, of course, Roz is short for Rossum.
Yes. 7134.
Yes, is a reference to Rossum's Universal Robots, which was our soft right. launch for this back in the day, back a while back. But yeah, that was fun, like the way the animals banded together. And, like a bear takes one down and then the others. So, of course, there was crucially one big difference is that in the book, the robots cannot go in water. And so if you want to defeat them, just push them into the sea.
Yes.
Or into a lake or
off a waterfall. Kind of like
Yeah.
Well, the combat robots, I think, were more hardened against that because the one robot stayed in the river for quite a while, had to go over the waterfall to be destroyed.
Yeah.
You're talking about the movie?
No, the book.
Oh, well, kind of a combination of both in that case.
Yeah, good book.
I was going to say that Rico battle was a lot longer in the book than it was in the movie.
Was it?
And a bit different.
It was more varied, but...
Maybe it seemed longer because they took care of one robot at a time versus the robots together in the movie. Which, I guess in non-linear real life, it probably would have happened just the same amount of time.
Yeah.
But of course, the book ends with Roz realizing they're just going to send more. And right. I need to go and seek my fortune across the sea and come back to Buttercup eventually. Oh, wait, no, that's
I had a very different take on the end of this book.
Okay.
So in the book, over the course of her stay on the island and as a result of this battle, Roz gets very beaten up.
Yes.
I believe she gets like Anakin Skywalker with basically just a torso and a head. but when the last Rico's about to die says, oh, your makers can fix you. Mm-hmm. My interpretation of that was she was leaving so she could go get fixed and then come back and not, I need to go away because they're going to keep finding me.
Yeah. There definitely is that element to it. And, he's trying to set up future books.
Yeah. And so, but it's also couched as, I need to leave because they'll keep coming back and I can't, she didn't want to pay the price of what that was. Right. So Mama Bear had broken bones. someone else had an injured foot. Chit Chat had a burned tail. I mean, there was damage to lots of animals all across the island.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and it does set up the future books in the series.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I haven't read, but, you know.
We'll get there. There's rumors of a sequel coming out.
Okay. That is true.
So, movie?
Movie.
Talk about movie.
Released in 2024 by DreamWorks.
Yes. Yep. And you saw that on your flight from to Colorado?
So I saw this. I first saw this movie in a theater when I was visiting my friend. Oh, you did. And then I saw it on a flight to Orlando and then a flight to Denver, yes. And then I watched it in the IMAX theater.
Okay. Nice.
So I have seen this thing on screens ranging from IMAX to my phone.
So you must really hate this movie.
Suffice it to say, you enjoy the movie.
I absolutely enjoy this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautifully animated.
Yeah.
I find there's a lot of times a sort of sameness in CGI films, Pixar films, you know, where I'm like, I'm just a little over the, I don't know.
It feels like we get the same character design at times.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so I always really, I love traditional animation. And so I like anything that, that kind of stretches the boundaries, like the Puss in Boots movie from a couple of years
ago. That was also by DreamWorks.
Yeah, it was amazing.
That was phenomenal.
I loved what they did with the animation style in that. And this one reminded me of that.
Yeah.
Where it's not trying for photorealism, right? They're definitely cartoon characters.
Yes.
Oh, one thing we should mention is the book is illustrated slightly, right?
Yes.
There are
great pictures sketches
of the robot, and it's got a very nice retro robot look. like in
kind of reminded me of Iron Giant.
Yeah,
that was also exactly. My thought as well.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. In its animation,
and so yeah, I really enjoy that.
Yeah,
but yeah, the animation is spectacular. The voice cast is really really good.
Yeah,
Lupita Nyong'o plays Roz, and Pedro Pascal as
really good.
Fink the Fox.
Great.
We also have
the voice cast was great.
Oh yeah,
it was fantastic.
That's just really good, but great.
Okay,
yeah,
all right.
We also have
correcting you, Seth.
Sorry. Yeah, in the voice cast, we also have Bill Nighy, Mark Hamill, Catherine O'Hara, Ving Rhames. I'm forgetting so many other people who are in this movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very very good cast.
Incredible.
And so one thing, and we've talked about this before, where when there's a book that's really in a character's head. How do you express that in a movie? And in this one, the way they do it is they kind of move Fink the Fox to a more foreground character.
Yeah.
Right. Who totally. is like, not the conscience, certainly, of Roz, because he's still playing his own game.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
I love the scene where he drops the crabs into the boiling water.
Also, I forgot to mention, Pedro Pascal plays Fink the Fox.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he gives her somebody to bounce off of, right? Where now you can have discussions and things. And you know, Fink is very much like, you know, I mean, if you don't want to raise a gosling, I have ideas, you know, just pats his belly, you know.
Why'd you do this? I might eat him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So you believe everything that everyone tells you?
Yes.
Noted. Noted. Yeah.
That's
the whole food scene was pretty fantastic.
That was pretty funny.
Like, oh, we need to feed him. He just uncovers the ground. Grubs.
I can teach you to swim the way my mom taught me to swim. Swim.
Yes. Yeah, he's definitely and a lot of the comic relief comes from him.
Yes.
There's one fun joke that kind of goes on throughout the movie and finally pays off at the end where there's the one beaver who's working on this like sequoia.
Right.
Barry as Paddler.
Yeah. Which was kind of fun. It's like, oh, now you need me.
My favorite line from this movie that for some reason, it took me a couple of times to watch is the male bovine excrement.
Oh, yes.
Well, that's how you get around using curse words. In a kids
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Although now, you know, every single kid's going to gonna run around going saying, male bovine excrement, male bovine excrement.
And honestly, I'll give that to them.
No, don't do that. They would do bad things with it.
So, like I mentioned, in this movie, Roz is essentially waterproof, right?
Yes.
Which, if you're going to have robots that are going to be doing agricultural work outdoors, it makes sense.
They kind of need to be weatherproof.
For them to be weatherproof.
Yeah, totally.
So I don't mind it. But it's one fewer vulnerability, because that's the other thing is, like, right, you don't really have to explain how a bunch of cargo crates got smashed on the rocks, because that's what waves do.
Yes.
So it doesn't have to just be that they were not waterproof. They got broken into pieces. And, you know, if Roz got broken into pieces, she'd probably be damaged by water as well.
Right.
It's a highly canonical movie. Mm. You know, we've talked about, you know, they brought Fink in the foreground. Mm-hmm. They pushed the beavers into the background.
Yeah.
They did a whole lot of character consolidation.
Yeah.
We went from one family of beavers to one beaver. We went from three bears to one bear. Longneck is in the book as well as the leader of the migration, but he has a more prominent role in the movie.
We had an expansion of opossums, I think, though.
Oh, yes. The opossum family was hilarious.
Yeah.
I've got six kids.
Death adjacent.
Five kids. Or whatever it was. Oh, nope, he's alive. That was a dark joke.
It was. And that's a shout back to Total Recall.
I've got five kids to feed.
Yeah.
Yeah. There definitely is. I mean, the book, as by nature of being a kid's book, right? It's kind of like, it reminded me a little of The Sword in the Stone, where, what is it? It's Arthur. I can't remember what he's called in the...
Oh, not Egg.
I don't know. Whatever Arthur, young Arthur's name is, in that, goes and, you know, like becomes a fish, and learns from the fish, right?
Yeah.
Becomes a hawk and learns from the hawks, you know. In this, it kind of, Roz learns something from the different animals, right?
Right.
But she, in the movie, she does it all independently. They are very much against her pretty much for the entire movie until winter.
Until winter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very heartwarming, the whole winter thing where she has built this hut and, you know, invites people into it. It doesn't have the in the book they have like the morning truce, right?
Yeah. But they have the lodge truce.
Yes. Yeah. But it's really good the way, you know, she found the freezing animals and brought them in and didn't save everybody.
Yeah.
Right.
But you can't.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the other nice thing about the book is while it's adapting the plot, it doesn't dumb it down. It doesn't make it saccharine. It doesn't just make it a pure comedy.
Yeah.
Although there's a lot of funny stuff in it and a lot of touching stuff in it and a lot of sad stuff in it. It's just a great movie, no matter what age you are.
Mm-hmm. I think the movie gives the book more emotion in every way, shape, and form.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It reminds me of something Brian Jakes said, you know, the author of Redwall, is that he was accused of just making books for kids. And he says, and then he was asked why he thinks adults like it. And the reason is, he says, he just tries to make a good yarn. Mm. And if you do that, you can succeed on all levels.
Yeah. I don't have any more notes. So
you don't have no more notes? Well, I can tell you it's had massive critical acclaim. It's 96% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm. It was financially successful off of a budget of, let me check this, it's $78 million. It so far made $333 million.
Damn.
So doing really, nice. Really well.
Yeah.
It has been nominated for dozens and dozens of awards. And unfortunately, because it was 2024 and it was up against Flo, it didn't win most of them. Although notably, it did win the Annie. Mm. So the animators felt like The Wild Robot was a better movie than Flo. And I think there are certain critical things you could say about the animation style and the development, the amount of money that they sank into it and the success that it had.
Right.
Was probably a recognition for there.
Flo had a particular kind of history with the animation, right? Where they used, I can't remember what the tool
Blender.
Was. Blender. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And for Gintz, Ziblotis, he had normally worked alone and knew that for telling a story of this magnitude, he needed to bring in other teams. So the movie is actually an analogy for his journey of learning to work with teams and work with other people. Mm. So really, really fascinating work. Mm. And they're going head to head. They've both nominated for a Hugo as well. So we'll have to see, you know, who does better.
Yeah.
Flo and
Wild Robot.
And the Wild Robot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, now I have to go watch Flo.
Yeah, you should. Even if you're not going to vote for the Hugos, you should watch Flo. It's just a great movie.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'll consider it.
Even if you're a cat person.
I was gonna pile onto your canonical thing, because I think it was very canonical as well. All the themes in the book, I think, got brought through to the movie, but just like magnified. Mm. And like what Peter was saying, where everything is just more... The movie itself is just more emotional. And when Emily and I were watching it, Emily actually cried a couple times in the movie, and she told me to tell you guys it was the most sob-worthy movie we've done in our canon so far. Mm. So she blames you, Colin.
She blames me. I made Emily cry.
I mean, I cried during World War Z, but for very different reasons.
She's like, I blame Colin for making me cry.
You know, the movies have this advantage. It's a visual medium. They've got the soundtrack going underneath, mm-hmm. and it's mm-hmm. a phenomenal soundtrack.
It's a great soundtrack.
Yeah. I loved it so much, I looked to go buy it, and it hasn't been publicly released yet in media. So. Yeah.
Well, and the voice cast really goes a long way to bring that emotion as well. Lupita Nyong'o is fantastic. I mean, everybody's great.
Yeah.
I will move up from very good to great. Do I hear amazing? Yes.
Yeah. So the score was by Chris Bowers, who's I have found the score on Spotify. I've listened to it a bunch. It's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. The song I Could Use a Boost is during when Brightbill leaves for the migration. That song is amazing. And my first thought was actually comparing it to the song Test Ride from How to Train Your Dragon, where mm-hmm. Hiccup and Toothless first have that fight together.
Yeah.
And apparently John Powell was originally supposed to do the score for this, but had to back out at the last minute due to something else.
Wow.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
I like the Wild Reboot. Robot.
Robot.
The movie?
Robot.
Yeah. Robot. Wait, it's the Wild Robot.
Wild Robot.
Yeah. So written and directed by Chris Sanders. And I didn't recognize that name. Mm-hmm. I kind of wish I did recognize that name because it means I would have seen more by him. Mm-hmm. Does anyone know if this is his premiere movie or if he's done other movies or what else has he done?
Sorry, I...
Sound of lots of phones being pulled out.
I loved him in IMDb.
That's one of his best roles.
That's a quote from Community.
What?
It's a quote from Community.
Mr. Guzman, I loved you in
the IMDb. So actually you have seen him in Lilo and Stitch.
Actually, I have not. I have not seen Lilo and Stitch.
He wrote that.
Didn't he also direct that?
That's cool.
Well, Mr. Sanders wrote How
to Train Your Dragon.
He wrote the screenplay for that?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Keep going.
Croods.
Croods is good. Croods is very good.
He's done a bunch of Lilo and Stitch stuff.
Yeah, yes.
He was a writer for Mulan.
I like the fact that there's a short film in there called Interstitial.
Yeah, looks like, according to this, he was also a writer on The Lion King, Aladdin, and Beauty and the Beast.
Wow. Well, I'll make you a deal, Mr. Sanders. If you can make The Wild Robot 2, we'll invite you onto our podcast to tell us about the process.
There we go. Oh, that would be fun. I mean, you know, what I've found in podcasting is lots of people are quite willing to come and talk about their work, even on a tiny little podcast.
Yeah, Ed Ashton was delightful. Mm-hmm.
That was a great conversation.
Yeah.
I was telling Dad about this. Like, I think it's kind of, I'm glad you kind of got him outside of his, like, the normal press, the media tour. Because, like, I'm guessing when you do media tour, you get asked like the same 5 or 6 questions the entire time.
I'm sure we covered some familiar ground.
Oh, yeah. But then you got into the tangent of, if I'm just sitting in a hospital bed on a morphine drip ready to die for my wife to pull the plug, this has been an enjoyable conversation and you all will go away when I die too. Just people are like, wait a second, what's going on right here?
Yeah. No, he was great. Yeah.
It's just engineers are good people. What can I say?
Yep.
Actually, the Disney thing, his association with Disney makes a lot more sense for me. So there's an Easter egg that I caught the first time and I didn't make the connection until later. Does anybody know the name of Roz's processor chip?
Is it a GPL 100 or whatever it was from Johnny Mnemonic?
It's an Alpha 113 processor. Which is typically a Pixar reference from, I believe it's the classroom at the California Institute for the Arts, where a lot of those people got their start. Chris Saunders was also in that classroom, so he threw that in as an Easter egg for this movie.
Nice. Definitely good stuff.
Yes.
I thought it was an allusion to Apple. All their chips are A-something.
Oh, really?
A-1, okay. A4, yeah.
Right, rank them.
Yeah, we can try.
Ooh.
Peter? Movie book.
Okay. Colin?
You guys got me this time. I got to say movie book. You know, the beautiful artwork, the incredible soundtrack, highly canonical. I mean, I absolutely loved it.
Yeah. James?
I'm going to read the other books, though.
Okay. James?
I mean, movie book as well, for the same reasons. It did a really good job at multiplying what was in the book.
Yeah.
Magnifying what was in the book and making it better.
And I'm glad to see we are all in agreement, right, Seth?
We are.
you had your hand up, like, ready to say something. Like, if he's going to go book movie.
No. I can't differ from you. Even though I did read the book first. I think I was the only one who did. But I liked kind of how canonical it was. No, wait, you read the book first, too.
Maybe I did read the book first.
Yeah. Because I heard you say something, and I thought you were complaining about canonicity, and I thought, did we watch the same movie and read the same book?
Yeah, he did. That was his first thing after watching the movie, was this is a terrible adaptation, which I couldn't tell if he was joking or not in that moment.
I think he must have been joking.
We didn't really talk about how the book and movie are different very much. We kind of talked about the theme-wise, but plot-wise, it's definitely different at places.
Well, there's a major difference. The movie has an ending, and the book is open-ended.
Yeah.
And so if they don't make a sequel, everything's kind of tied up. There's a reunion and...
Yeah.
Right.
I forgot that, it doesn't really tie it off, right? Because the same thing happens where... And maybe we can talk about this. I know we've already ranked them, but who cares?
Yeah.
Where you have the Ricobots come, and they're a lot more advanced than at least... It's a more intense confrontation than I pictured in the book.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, consider the audience.
Yeah. And there's like the ringleader of them. That's the
Fontra.
The squid from the squiddies from The Matrix.
The squid is pretty fantastic.
I love the art style on it. It's very creepy.
Yeah. I love how the robots are rendered with a lot of detail and precision, but then a lot of the backgrounds, the animals, I think you mentioned this to me, it's more like paintbrush.
It's like a brush strokes.
A little rougher.
Yeah.
It's
a little wilder.
But anyhow, at the end, Roz does take the ship and head back to the mainland or whatever, presumably to get repairs. It doesn't leave it there, right? It shows that there is a reunion.
Between her and Brightbill.
Yeah.
So Roz comes to find Brightbill because she's falling down a mountain for a reason and then ends up falling on top of his nest, and he's the only survivor. Mm-hmm. In the book, the Brightbill finding out about Roz not being his actual mom is played off very fast, and he's very accepting about it, where it's very different in the movie, where there's definitely this rift between them that kind of exists for almost the entire rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's never a total reconciliation until he comes back from migration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the movie, yeah.
Which is just like kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it reminds me of like Brett Bill's going through the awkward teen phase where now my parents are stupid.
Yeah. He was smoking, getting tattoos. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Unprotected sex. So.
Yikes.
Drinking.
There did seem to be a lot less confrontation in the book than in the movie. Like, or a lot less like hatred of the animals towards the robot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Aside from the bears, the bears are kind of the only example I could really think of.
Well, isn't it in the book, the encounter with the bears is what leads to the nest being destroyed. Roz is fleeing that. Yeah. Right?
She gets chased by the mama bear, I believe.
Right.
But later in the book, the two cubs come and they attack her, which is how she loses her foot then.
Right. Oh, that's, I forgot about the foot. Yes. I was glad that they kept that.
They kept the foot thing.
I wondered why, with all the spare robot parts, they just didn't pop a new foot on, because in the factory, that's exactly how it's described.
I know, right?
Right.
I keep wondering that too.
Yeah.
There's all these extra robot parts in that cave. Come on.
Nobody tried this.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't find the cave until after Brightbill leaves, if I remember correctly.
In the book also, though.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I was thinking
that. Well, they mentioned that they tried pushing the parts against her, hoping they'd connect, and they just didn't. Mm-hmm. That's at the very end of the book, not when they first have the foot, but still.
The SIM card didn't match or something.
Yes.
Yeah, they put a PCI in an ISO slot. Yeah.
Exactly. The USB connection was upside down.
Yes.
Both times.
Hers was USB-C, and the other ones were
Lightning. Type B.
Lightning.
Oh, yeah. Horrible.
Yeah. So, I think we're wrapped.
Yes. And next, we'll be talking about some other recent events. I mean, we've been doing a lot of new stuff recently.
Yes. So, to continue the Robot series, we're going to be talking about the Apple TV Plus series Murderbot. And after this episode comes out, we may release an episode where we talk about the trailer and talk about kind of what our hopes are for the series. And then eventually we'll get to AI, artificial intelligence. We'll probably do a couple episodes on Murderbot, kind of like we did with Percy Jackson.
Yeah, I figure like we have to do review the initial episodes that are released, but then it comes out over a number of weeks, and so we have to do something in June that isn't Murderbot, but then we should wrap up Murderbot.
But my friends from Hugo Girl recently did an episode where they didn't talk about science fiction really at all. They just talked about things that were making them happy, and I think that's a good thing. You know, so I wanted to briefly poll you guys to see, is there anything, Peter, that's making you happy right now? Never mind, Peter. No. Anything?
Not that I can think of right now.
No? Okay.
What kind of things do I think make Peter happy? No, not that.
Oh, Andor comes out on Tuesday.
Andor comes out on Tuesday.
As we record this on the 19th.
Sweet.
Yes.
Nice.
It's finally springtime, question mark, in Oregon. So hopefully we'll have consistent.
This might be full of spring, but.
This is also me knocking on word as I say this, so I'm just clearing the air.
Yes, no, it's our
second false spring.
Yes, then we'll have fifth winter.
I've seen followed I've by seen things mud, like fool's spring and false hope and the pollining, which the pollen is starting to come out. But yes, it's been kind of consistently in the the last few days have been above 70 degrees Fahrenheit, which is the correct temperature scale.
How about you, Seth?
I was going to go with the OMSI Science Fiction Film Festival because I went ahead and got the pass this year. I'm not probably using it enough to make it make sense, but it is, there's something nice to being able to go to any of the movies that I want to without having to buy a pass and getting the priority seating so I can sit someplace where I'm not absolutely miserable because I can't move my legs like I was in Mickey 17.
Yeah. And that's funny because, Tim and I went to over 20 movies last year and where we were sitting, he's quite a bit taller than I am. Mm-hmm. He did not experience the kind of discomfort that we did when we saw The Wild Robot. And
you mean Mickey 17?
Mickey 17. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
He's a lot younger, though.
True.
Yeah.
Their bones are made out of, are still made out of a little bit of rubber.
The reason that for me that like it's making me happy is just because what I'm using it for is mostly to see movies that I've never seen in the theater. Because there's a lot of older movies, right? And so I had never seen The Fifth Element in theaters. I had never seen, what was the other one?
Terminator?
Oh, Super 8.
Super 8.
I hadn't seen that.
That's Terminator. A good movie.
I've never seen The Terminator in theaters, right? I've seen Terminator 2 in theaters.
But that's tonight, isn't it?
That's tonight.
Are you coming earlier to see Midnight Express? Special?
No. I'll just come for the Terminators.
Okay. We'll try and hold you a seat.
Yeah. And then Tim and Ethan and I went and saw A Clockwork Orange, which... For the record, we're not going to cover through this podcast.
If you guys want to cover it, I'll step out.
Okay. I know that Ben from the Sci-Fi Christian would love to do that one. It's an interesting movie. And it has an interesting adaptational element because the ending is completely different. There's evidently a whole chapter of the novella that is left off the end of the movie.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Huh. So people have very strong feelings about which they prefer.
Interesting.
But yeah, the film festival has been really, really cool. And the weather.
You can patch 8 for Baldur's Gate 3 came out this week.
Patch 8?
Patch 8?
Tell me more.
Because patch 8 introduced a whole new, all new subclasses for every class in the game.
Was that something you started playing last year because of the Hugos?
Yes. <Okay. laughs> I've been playing this game since September 2024. Nonstop.
Nice.
Because it's awesome. It went on sale right after Larian won the reward, so I bought it while we were in Scotland.
Nice.
And then came back and started playing it, and I haven't really played anything else since then. I played a little bit of Spider-Man, but then I went back to Baldur's Gate.
Wow. Nice. All right. Anyhow, some stuff, makes us smile, despite the fact that there's a lot of male bovine excrement going on in the United States. So... Anyhow, on that note, thank you everybody for listening. Let us know if you have seen The Wild Robot. And
can I propose an ending for this?
Okay.
I have a modified Pavement Pounder blessing.
Okay, go for it.
May the road rise up to meet you, and may you always find that awoo inside of you.
Awoo! Nice. All right, bye everybody.
Ciao.
All right.